You're listening to the Common Fan Podcast, a Husker football podcast for the common fan by the common fan.
Welcome back to the Common Fan Podcast. I am TJ Burkle, as always, alongside Maddie Owens Sr. and Geoff in Lincoln. Friend of the program, Josh Peterson, is back with us to talk some Husker spring ball. But first, make sure you get to the Common Fan website, www.commonfan.co. Subscribe to the newsletter. It's free. Subscribe on YouTube. That's free as well. Follow all the social media accounts. We're right in the middle of spring ball. It's going to be fall before we know it. Mm-hmm. Get all your fix. Get all the Common Fan fix and get ready to roll. If you don't know the third team linebacker, if you're not in on the third team linebacker conversation in March, then you need to be.
Yeah, what are you doing?
What are you even doing with your life?
www.commonfan.co. Also go to cpbeef.com. Get all the best Nebraska beef from certified Piedmontese and use the promo code COMMONFAN to get 25% off. That's COMMONFAN, all one word, to get 25% off. At cpbeef.com, you can get the best steaks in the country delivered right to your front door anywhere across all 50 states. And those steaks are that beef is raised and grazed in the beautiful Sand Hills region of the state. Josh Peterson, I was shocked to learn that there's anyone in the state of Nebraska who doesn't want to talk about the third team linebacker in March.
Yeah, my whole industry, my job is built off of wanting to talk about the third string linebacker and third string everything in March. So, yes, it was news to me that not everybody feels the same way as I do. Good to be back on the pod, boys. How are you?
We're doing well. We're
great.
Doing well.
Thanks. Great to have you. And welcome to the two-timers club. We'll get you your jacket any day now.
I'll catch up with Vogel one of these days.
Yes. Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Well, that's a tall order.
Yeah.
Him and Evan Bland both.
We don't have a jacket for you. I'm sorry. We have socks. We can get you socks right
Hey,
now.
That's nice. You know, a lot of the marathons that I run, they give you socks. So I'll take a pair. I'll take a fresh pair of socks.
Yeah, from one runner to another, I completely understand.
You cannot call yourself a runner, Jeff.
Jeff ran a mile in high school once, and he's still trading on that.
25 years later, he's still talking about it.
So for those listeners, those Common Fan listeners who don't know what we're talking about, there was some kerfluffle. So we're recording the week that this happened. I guess it'll be out Monday. So we'll say last week there was some kerfluffle on social media. Jacob Bigelow, who is a writer for Husker Illustrated and sometimes a radio commentator, I think. I mean, he goes on the shows. He talks basketball. He's a pretty smart basketball guy. So he was on with Gary Sharp and made some comments about, you know, we shouldn't focus too much on Husker football in the spring, and there's nothing you can learn about, you know, Husker football in the spring. Kind of poked fun. There's a little bit of snark to it. Kind of poked fun at, you know, sort of, I think, the whole Nebraska football media complex ecosystem, whatever you want to call it. And the sort of the fact that we are obsessed with Husker football all the time. This podcast is we've built our whole thing on all Husker football all the time. So I certainly disagree with Mr. Bigelow and his take, but I want to talk about it a little bit. He also had a funny line in there that, you know, he made a remark that, you know, yeah, pouring all the resources, the universities and the athletic department's resources into football has really worked well the last 20 years. And, you know, sort of used the term Weekend at Bernie's a couple times to talk about how he tried to stand up the football program, for those who are familiar with that movie. Then some of the Twitter discourse got a little bit more, I felt a little bit more personal and snarky. I will admit, we on the Common Fan Podcast went back and forth with Jacob a couple times. There was a little bit of snark from our end, certainly his end as well. He deleted his Twitter account, so I can't go back and read the tweets word for word, but nobody needs that anyway. I will say we followed back up because I was like, look, to the extent that anybody pays attention to the Common Fans, and we're realistic about, you know, we love all of our listeners, but we're realistic that people have lots of stuff to listen to and read, and it's not, you know, we're not it for everybody. But we've kind of tried to build our brand on just fun and frivolity. And we don't try to do hot takes, and we don't get in Twitter fights with people. And, you know, we're actually really benevolent. We actually did a change.org petition to save Brian Ferentz's job a year and a half ago. But anyway, that's beside the point. So I was like, this is stupid. We don't do Twitter fights. So we followed back up and said, hey, Jacob, we got off on the wrong foot. This is actually an interesting discussion. Why don't you come on the pod with us sometime? And he never responded to that one. So we'll see. Maybe we'll meet Jacob Bigelow down the road. Maybe we won't. But I just wanted to get into this conversation, Josh, because I know you and Jack had a conversation about it, too. I'm with you. I read what you said, Josh. I didn't have a chance to listen, but I read it. Part of the reason I wanted to do this podcast is because I myself, as a fan, am constantly hankering for Husker football content. Mm-hmm. I'm with you. I scroll through the Gary Sharps, and when Sam McEwen's a guest or Brian Christopherson's a guest, or I scroll through your show, I scroll through the other shows, Nick Boss podcast, all the podcasts. If they're talking about March Madness or hoops, or if the baseball team's doing something good or whatever, I care. I'm usually up to speed on that news,
mm-hmm.
but I may not spend precious podcast time listening or reading about it. If it's football, put it into my veins. I want it all. Tell me your thoughts on that, Josh.
Yeah, you know, it's funny, and thanks for the plug. That was Jack Mitchell and I on the IED Club, and TJ, you had a chance to join us last summer to talk about the project that you guys had been working on. And I found this kind of discussion this week very interesting, because I grew up in an era, and we're all pretty much in the same age group, right? Where
you're younger than us, but go ahead.
Sports talk radio is coming into existence early, you know, I mean, message boards are around, right? And there are articles to read, and you can maybe read online and stuff like that, but it was different. It was different. There was, for me, you know, in Omaha, there was 1620 The Zone. There was 590, and so there were two shows when I was in high school. They were both on at the same time, right? On Sports Mind Conduct, which is where I work now, and then whatever Matt Peralt's show was, and I hated that show. But I listened to it during commercial breaks, right? And so that was where I would go to listen. That was it. If I wanted to hear things every day during the week, that's what I listened to. And I remember thinking, this week I spent time kind of looking back on when I was a teenager and then even into college. And I would, you know, in the summertime especially, like that kind of the barren wasteland of like, what the hell am I going to listen to? Because yeah. I want it to be about football.
Right.
And so I've always thought that, you know, I represent kind of that type of fan, because that is how I operated and how I still operate. You know, like, I'm guessing, I don't want to say that like I have this outsized impact on Sportsman Iconic today of like, without me, we wouldn't talk football. No, they would. John, we're not idiots, right? Like, it's the beast that needs to be fed. But I know that I, in particular, you know, end up pushing us a little bit more, just like Michael Sevier did when he was on with Kugler back in the day. You know, that show before Michael and then during Michael, It was night and day in terms of the amount of football that they ended up talking about. And that's because there are a lot of people like you guys, like me, that want to hear it at all times, regardless of how good or bad the team is. And I think that is maybe, you know, one of the interesting parts of this discussion that I guess I haven't really got into a whole lot this week. But it's like, yes, they've sucked, but people, that doesn't matter in terms of what people want to hear about. You know, the Browns are terrible. You know what they want to talk about in Cleveland? The Browns. Like, it doesn't matter the time of year, right? And so I used that example on the IED Club with Jack Mitchell, where, like, I remember hearing a story about day after the NBA Finals in 2016, the Cavs win. That's their first championship in that city since, I think, the 40s with Cleveland and the baseball team. And they were like, yeah, but can we do a little Browns today? You know, like, so that's kind of what it is there. And so I think that we are very much a market like that, much to the chagrin of others that maybe want to hear more about basketball or baseball or, I guess, anything else other than Husker football.
Don't you think that's generally our country? Like, the United States of America football has become dominant, and it's year round. There's always something going on with football. It's rosters. It's coaching changes, all those things. There's always something to talk about. You know, just because there aren't games going on, it doesn't mean there aren't interesting things going on that could affect those games months from now, right?
100%. Mm-hmm. You know, and I know when Sevier and Bigelow kind of got into the original, you know, part of their back and forth, which kind of really kicked everything off right on Monday. Michael said, I think he was like, we live in a football city, which is in a football state, which is in a football country, which is in a football galaxy. And that is very much the case. And like, is there a guarantee that it will be that way forever? No, of course not. You know, like 80 years ago, the idea that baseball or boxing or horse racing wouldn't be like the king is kind of wild to think about to that generation of people. But at this moment in time, football is still that. And I mean, you know, with all the metrics, our metrics, you know, the national television ratings, the fact that like everything has gone down, and it's not really that football's gone up, but football's just stayed, which is still in this day and age is absolutely wild when you consider what's happened to the NBA, what's happened to Major League Baseball, what's happened to college basketball. We're recording right before the Final Four, right? Like all of those things, everything has gone down, but football, not so much. And it just shows, you know, I love asking, why is it? Why do we love football? And there's a myriad of reasons. But for whatever reason, we love football. And it's the sport that no matter what time of year, I know I am always game for chatting Husker football, college football, NFL, whatever it is.
I enjoyed your comparison, too, when you talked about the Dallas Cowboys. I think you guys brought them up, too. I think a lot of it has to do with a lot of these areas of the country or these different programs. Their sport, a lot of times, if it's reached the top of the mountain, like Owen says, there's a yearning to try and get back to that, right? You've gotten that taste, that feel, that high. You want to have it again. So, like, you know, you've got, like, Kentucky. They're always – basketballs are going to always be at the top of their list. Or, like, North Carolina, because they've achieved the highest of the high. Yeah, they've got decent football programs, but their primary sport is basketball because they've gotten to that high. I would say, like, Dallas Cowboys, they've gotten to the high. So they don't really care about – the Stars. I mean, they care about them and the Mavericks, but Dallas Cowboy football is always going to be number one to them. I think the same thing is with Nebraska. We got to that point and we know what it's like, and we're going to do and talk about any way to get us to convince ourselves that we're going to get back to that because we want to feel that high again.
Yeah, 100%. You know, like I am, and we are all are part of that kind of generation, that last gasp, you know, where I you guys are going to remember more than I do. I think we talked about that last time I came on, but I first full season I can remember is 97. So like I get that immediate, you know, dopamine hit of like, whoa, this is pretty sweet. And, you know, you have good years after that. And then, of course, it just falls and falls and falls. And then the last 8 years really kind of fell off a cliff. And that's where I think that the, you know, the generational part of that discussion, like it was not lost on me, you know, that Jacob is in his 20s. And so somebody like him, you know, if you think about when all of us became fans or cognizant of football, probably somewhere in that 6 to 10 range. Some of us it's earlier, some of us it's later, but whatever it is. So it's like, okay, someone born in 97, you talk about 6 years old, you're looking at 03. I mean, like there's literally, I've only seen him play for a few conference titles, only seen them play. Never seen them win, and certainly, obviously, then never seen them win the national championship, really compete for a national championship. Like, I do have to wonder if there is just this large group out there that, you know, I don't engage with on a daily basis just yet because maybe they're not into sports talk radio, but that is almost kind of lost to this whole Husker football fandom component because they don't understand because they never even got initiated when they were really good, when it could kind of grab them. It's something I think about all the time because, I mean, sports talk radio is kind of an older man's, you know, game, if you will, in terms of like how people take in the show. Though now we're on YouTube, right? Like we've been doing podcasts for years. So it's like we are in the technological avenues that are available. But I'd be lying if I didn't say, I wonder what that next generation is thinking with Husker football or with listening to sports talk radio in general, just given how, again, an old man's medium it has seemed to be for many, many years.
Yeah. And that's a really good point. And Matty O brought this up before we started recording too, but that's one thing I didn't factor in. These guys have, you know, what's the best thing they've seen? You know, the win over, yeah, the game
Big 12
over
North
Georgia,
Division champions.
The Quincy Nunn 99-yard touchdown from Tommy Armstrong.
Like, how depressing is that? How depressing is it to think of, like, if you ask somebody, hey, what's your favorite Husker moment? You know, like, my favorite moment as a student, I was there from Callahan's last year until, like, the middle, late stages of the Bo Pelini era, right? I had season tickets in 7, 8, 9, 10, and 11. So I had five, because I was there for 5.5 years, not to brag. So I had season tickets for those years. My favorite game was 2010 Missouri. But you talk to somebody that is like older than me. There is someone who subscribes to the ID Club and he writes for Husker Max, Dave Fite. And he, I found out recently, was at school 93, 94, 95, 96, wow. 97.
Wow.
Like, what a complete jerk, first of all, Dave. Yeah. Screw you. It's like, what's your favorite game? I mean, he's got one versus two, two versus... He has all sorts of matchups.
He has 60 of them. 60 and three.
Seriously, yeah. He was like, yeah, we went 60 and three. Again, no big deal. Okay, now then apply that to someone. Imagine the poor soul that got there for Frost first year and was like, wow, I'm finally here at the beginning of the comeback. What's their favorite game? Michigan State in the snow? Like, you're not talking about this list of tremendous football games. And so I have to, I mean, we're all, as a society, we've gotten very much jaded, right, about pretty much everything. I cannot imagine being a young Husker fan and not being jaded when all your life you've heard, they're going to be good again, they're going to be good again, and they never are good again.
Yeah. Well, and for us, with having kids, you know, I've talked about this towards the end of last season. Like, my son really started paying attention around, I don't know, age 5 or 6. So he didn't remember Nebraska even making a bowl game. Like, he was too young to even know or care that they had, you know, the last time they had made a bowl game. And then, I'm, you know, this child abuse that a lot of us are doing, dragging our kids along to be a part of this thing, and then just to be let down and disappointed and in tears when they lose, you know, a few years ago to Michigan State on the punt return. And my son's like devastated and crying. And I'm like, why am I doing this to him? You know? So a lot of these, there are kids that don't even, you know, younger than their 20s who've had it even worse than those people that are in their mid to late 20s. Like, it's really crazy to even think about that.
Go ahead, Jeff.
I was going to say real quick to you, there's also a certain group that kind of falls in between that too, that I work with a few of them that grew up during the time when we were at the height of our powers, have witnessed everything that's gone on since. And it's almost like maybe jaded, but bitter. And now they're at the point where they are Husker fans, but they get sick of hearing about Husker football because when we bring it up, like, hey, we could win 7-8 games this year, their first answer is, why do you think that?
Yeah.
And I say, well, you know, we've got the talent here. Yeah, exactly. But why do you think that? Prove it to me. I want to see it. So we're kind of all over the board here. But yeah, there's the group that has never seen it. There's the group like us that have seen it, want to get back to it. And I do think there's a group in the middle that's just bitter and kind of pissed off about the whole thing. So we're kind of the whole gamut.
That's a great point, Jeff. So first of all, Matt, Jeff, and I are all within months of each other. Matty O and I are 2 days apart, actually. But so we were 12, 13, and 15 for the three national titles in the 90s. There's not a much better age.
It's a perfect age.
Right? Because your whole world is college football.
Yep.
You're like, you know,
and you're old enough to be really cognizant of everything.
You know,
right?
Everything. You know everything that's going on, all because you don't have any responsibility yet.
Yep.
So you're watching college games. You're watching all the stuff on ESPN. Back then, obviously, there's not a lot going on the internet, or there's no social media. But so I just remember, like, it was Saturday. It was like all college football all the time. So not only was it like, okay, Nebraska took care of business, what's Penn State doing, or what's this team doing, what's that team doing? And it's like a little, like, we're cognizant. You care about it more than anything else. You're not quite, like, girls aren't quite, you're not there yet. Like, you know, like, there's other stuff that's going to take over your interest in your teen years. It's like all, like, we were the perfect age for those things. But to Jeff's point, it's such a good point, because first of all, we grew up hearing about, like, the Devaney teams from our parents, right? Mm-hmm. And then in the 80s and 90s, even when we're winning stuff, we were always top 10, top 15. Like, we're always part of the conversation, I mean, for the most part. Then Osborne finally gets over the hump, we win it all, blah, blah, blah. So I've thought about this a lot, Geoff, actually, to your point. We have, like, I think it's a defense mechanism for some people. Some of us, unfortunately, just have the illness and we keep pushing forward. But I think for some people, you go to that well so many times. We've gone to that well of optimism, the well of hope, the well of belief, the well of this new coach is going to make it work. The fact, you know, all of the, we've gone to that well so many times, only to have it not work.
Yeah,
that it's like you. It's not even conscious. It's instinctive. That you wall yourself off. It's natural to say, I'm not going to go there again. Like, I have to, like, yeah. It sounds, I think people who aren't big sports fans would probably think this sounds insane, but you, like, have to protect yourself almost. I know.
Don't hurt me.
Like, yeah. I know people who are like, I'm not going to engage. I get too upset when they lose, or like I've done it too many times where I bought the hype, I believed, and they fell short, and it only makes me mad. So I'll check the score, or maybe I'll watch the games, but I
But
can't
I'm not
get,
going to be as
I'm
engaged.
not going to be as engaged.
Yeah.
I've tried that, unfortunately, like the addiction is just too strong,
Yeah, you're an
and
addict. You need help.
I've
So
just,
powerful.
yeah, I've just accepted. I've gone the opposite direction and said, I'm just going to embrace this, you
Yeah, you
know,
know, it's
go
funny,
all
TJ.
in. Yeah.
I remember my sophomore year in college. So again, a little younger than you guys, 07 and then 08, right? So Bo Pelini's hired, and I was having a conversation with my roommate who I had known in high school, and he told me, he's like, yeah, you know, it's so different being a Husker fan today, isn't it? He's like saying this to me like we're in agreement, and I'm just listening to him. He's like, you know, my family, like, man, when we were growing up, we really used to, like, it was our whole Saturday was those games, and now it's not anymore, and like it's just kind of like that for us now, huh? And I'm like, what are you talking about? It's not like that for my family, and it's still not. My dad has season tickets. Him and my parents have season tickets. They go to pretty much every home game every year. When they're not there, they're not doing stuff during games. You know, they're not like, "Wait, you
Right.
want to go shopping?" No, of course they're still engaged with the games. And I mean, again, to go back to the beginning of our conversation, my career is built off of people that are as engaged as that. You know, certainly in season, but even the sickos like you guys and like me who are engaged out of season. I am someone who pays for a college football Substack that does bonus episodes all year long. Like, that is the type of fan that I am of college football, you know, as a whole. And so I think that it has been very interesting over the years, where I think a lot of people do kind of put that, you know, there's one thing to put your guard up in terms of, yeah, I'm going to pick them to go 6-6 this year because anything better than that and I'm going to be happy. The other of like, I don't know really if I'm going to even engage with them beyond passing watches or mentions because it's just not what it used to be when I was a kid or whatever.
Yeah.
So I want to get to a couple other things Jacob mentioned in particular. I do disagree also with the fact that you can't learn anything from spring ball. Like, I mean, in addition to us just being obsessed with it, like, I feel like there's actual stuff to learn. We don't know how the quarterback room is going to shake up, you know, shake out after Dylan, right? And there are Sharp made the point on at some point in all the Jacob Bigelow stuff, but he was talking about how, you know, I think they've been talking a lot lately about how, in order for Nebraska to take the next step this year, some of the guys who have been around the program for a few years are going to have to find that next step. They're going to have to go from
Sure.
reserves to starters or to contributors or whatever. I think there's a lot to learn, right? And so, you know, I feel like spring ball is not, you know, this sort of worthless exercise. You know, yeah, sure. We're not going to see Dana Holgorsen's offense, and like, we're not going to know how he's going to change the offense or impact the offense, or maybe some big picture things like that. But I feel like there's plenty to learn in spring ball.
Yeah, you know what I think is kind of happened as is this is where maybe this discussion is very, you know, about the minutia, but I think it is almost a does stuff happen in spring ball? Yes. But then other people, and I don't want to put words in anyone's mouth, but it's like, I just get sick of the constant positivity Kool-Aid about the things that are happening in spring
Yeah.
ball. But those are two separate discussions, right? Like, I'll make a reference to my beloved, though I hate them now, Dallas Cowboys. Last year, they were going through contract negotiations with CeeDee Lamb, and they were going to sign him the entire time they were going to sign him. Everyone knew they were going to sign him, but because Jerry Jones is a moron, they waited until August. And so what did that mean? It meant, because of how you negotiate in the NFL, if you aren't signed yet, especially at a non-quarterback position where you don't have a green jersey on, you don't practice. You don't go to OTAs. You don't go to mini camps. You don't do any of those things. And so by the time the season arrived, he had just gotten there, what, like a week and a half, 2 weeks before. Forget about whether he was in shape or not. He was. He was not on the same page as Dak Prescott because they had not worked on their game. And like, you can lose chemistry, you know, when you're suddenly not together for however much time. I always think about when I come back from a vacation and how it takes maybe a couple shows for John and I to get back into that rhythm that we usually are in on a day-to-day basis. Okay, so now what does that mean for Josh? Why are you talking about the Dallas Cowboys again for no reason? It's because that's what they are doing right now. Dane Key, who has never worked with Dylan Raiola, is getting a chance to work with Dylan Raiola. All of these new guys out of the portal are there, and they are learning the offense. They are learning the defense. There's a new defensive coordinator. There's a basically a new offensive coordinator, right? I know he coached the last four games at Holgorsen, but come on, he's pretty much new. There's a new special teams coordinator. But all of that is very much different than, I am sick of hearing about how they are so much better and always improving. Like, those are two different discussions. And I think everybody would acknowledge that. I think what is hard for some, and I do understand this because I know I felt this way during the Frost era. I got very frustrated by, like, they're always saying they're getting better. We did a game. We did a game 3 years ago this month where I read quotes from spring 2018, spring 2019, spring 20, spring 21, spring 22. And the listeners had to guess, when were those quotes from? Because it all sounds the same. We're getting better. Never have we been closer. The coaches, like, we're all on the same page. So, like, I will definitely understand that. But I don't know what to, I kind of don't know what to do with that, because what is a player going to say? Yeah, our chemistry is garbage. You know, like, they're not going to say that type of stuff. If anything, they're going to try to talk themselves. It's like a relationship that's falling apart. No, we're doing great. We're having a lovely time. Like, they're going to try to talk themselves into things being okay, even if they're not. But it's also, it's April. There's not a football game for 5 months. They're probably feeling great right now because they don't have to worry about the stresses of the season.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Two things. First, speaking of the Cowboys, did they get Micah Parsons' situation figured out there, Josh?
No, I would be surprised if that will be the same thing where they're just going to wait, and I'm going to be very, very mad about it.
Yeah. Second thing, like, not just spring ball, but, like, our whole, like, claim to fame now is we always win the offseason, right? So we always have something to talk about. That's why I don't understand the argument of why are we talking football in the spring. I feel like, especially in the NIL era, people are coming, people are going. There's always something going on now. So I just don't really understand the argument of there's nothing to talk about. There is always something to talk about with Nebraska football. There's always news. Somebody's leaving. Somebody's entering the transfer portal. When we picked up Dylan randomly in that December year of 2023, there's always something to talk about. So I respect the opinion that Jacob fellow has, but I don't see it the same way. I feel like there's always something to talk about.
Yeah. And you know what, too, I would add, Jeff, is that there, you know, you mentioned the offseason champion thing like that. Now, I don't think anyone actually truly feels that way. Like, there's going to be optimism because it's the offseason and you want to believe that your team is going to be better. It's more fun to approach it that way than how I'm approaching the Cowboys season, right? Like, I would much rather be excited for the season, you know, like I was a few years ago than I am at this moment in time. But nobody earnestly is like, yep, offseason champs. Like, that's now become like this weird meme. Like, Matt Rhule got asked about it, what, at the first press conference of the spring, or maybe it was the one beforehand. And, like, there was a part of me that was almost like, I don't know if Matt Rhule knows what you're talking about, question asker, because nobody earnestly is like, yep, they did it again, folks. People are excited. I think people are talking themselves into maybe like a 8-win or a 9-win season, or, hey, maybe they could be the Indiana, the schedule's manageable, yada, yada, yada. But no one is truly out there saying Dane Key is the difference between 12-0 and 8-4. Like, nobody's doing that. And so, like, that's where, again, the snark of everything, it can kind of dial a little too far for me, because I haven't sensed in years that true offseason championship type vibe. That felt like kind of the dying days of the Riley era. And I guess maybe some of the early Frost stuff, but not so much what's happened end of Frost and early Matt Rhule.
It's pretty much a joke now, right?
It's like a running joke. Yeah.
If you ask any of these guys, I mean, with our receiver depth right now, we're definitely going to the college football playoff.
Well, I've got to set 11-1. Go ahead, man.
Well, I don't know. I think TJ and I are very similar in how we approach Husker football, sports, anything, like, pretty much life in general. Like, we're positive thinkers, right? Like, I don't want to live in a world where, you know, I'm thinking, oh gosh, they probably won't even make a bowl game, but they'll have to just, you know, prove me wrong, kind of. What, like, I don't, that's not how I operate. It's like, you know, we made these changes to this, it looks positive. So that could mean a couple more wins this year. So I'm always talking I'm the guy talking myself into 8, 9, 10, whatever it might be. Yes. It's never like that. It's never a glass half empty thing for me. It's like, you know, and even like I talked to people over the last 10 years and we'd be playing Ohio State or somebody and we're 20-point underdogs. And I'd get asked, do you think we're going to win? And I'd be like, well, you never know. They got to play the game, right? And they would be like, are you kidding me? Like, we have no chance. I'm like, well, yeah, we do, because they're going to throw a ball out on the field and two teams are going to play and weird things can happen and we could win. That's the way I operate. So the people that are, I guess the people that kind of Jeff kind of mentioned, where it's like, they're, you know, they're going to have to prove to me that I'm going to have to see it. Like, I'm not that way. And I think there's thousands of other people that think the same way.
Definitely. And you know what, dude, you're going to be right one of these times, because as you gave that answer, you know what I was thinking of was the Ohio State game last year and how a couple plays here and there and Nebraska does it. They go to 6-2 and the entire tenor of the rest of the season completely changes with that one game. Of all the, I think Dirk was maybe the first person, Dirk Challen was the first person to kind of point this out, but it was like everyone in college football has had like that one kind of moment over the last decade, except for Nebraska. Like Kansas has had a moment, and hell, Vanderbilt, right? Like they got the win over Bama last year. Yeah, they go to a bowl game. Like all those things are happening. Nebraska has still, you know, the last kind of true memorable, oh my gosh, you had to be there win, I would say was like 2015 Michigan State, which that means we're talking about a decade ago this November when they beat a team that would go on to play for the playoffs. Sadly, like, at least on paper right now, the 2025 schedule, it only has two of those, I think, Michigan and Penn State. Now, a win over Iowa would mean the world because they barely beat Iowa anymore. Hell, even a win over Minnesota would mean a lot, right, given how it hasn't happened. But that true kind of it's going to lead SportsCenter type win, Nebraska hasn't had one of those in many, many years, even though like everybody else in college football has.
Owens, it's 2025. Quit being positive. You're supposed to be pissed off. A cynic.
I can't do it, Jeff.
Fall in line, okay?
I can't do it.
All right, well, Owens, look at your 401k, and then you can feel depressed.
I'm not doing that. not doing that.
Well, and you know, the sad thing is, Josh, the 2015 win over Michigan State, we still went 5-7 that year. And it wasn't like some magical, you know, string of wins or something. Correct. To, you know, to get us over the hump of some sort. All right, last thing on the Jacob Bigelow thing, that it was a comment he made on Twitter that I thought was the most, like, the least fair and probably the most inappropriate about how, like, so many grifters over the years have, you know, made their living covering Nebraska football, because I do believe that some Nebraska fans at least don't realize how lucky they are with the quality and the volume of journalism that we get in this state. And that's the guys who, you know, the Mitches and the Sams and the Evans and the Brandons and then all you guys on the radio as well. It's the guys who write about it, it's the guys who talk about it, right? It's everything, right?
Yeah.
And it's really good. I mean, you go to some other cities, it's not that good, even with pro sports teams. And so I thought that really wasn't fair. But I also, and I want to be clear, like, we're not in any way equating ourselves with those of you who do it for a living. We've made a small, like, we every month we get a little bit of money from this podcast from various sources. It's going to be enough to, like, maybe buy the food for our tailgate in the fall. I want to be clear on that. But let me just say, proud grifter.
Proud grifter. That's a lot. Yeah.
Okay. Proud grifter. But no, I was annoyed by that, because, like, for us and for so many people, we all have jobs and kids and spouses, and, like, this is a labor of love. Like, we've talked about Nebraska football. It's, you talked about your parents, Josh. Like, this is a family thing. This is a tribal thing. It's way deeper than a team that you cheer for. Don't roll your eyes, Jeff. and so that's the other thing too. Like, I can understand the cynicism of somebody in their 20s, but I'm just not on that wavelength at all.
Yeah, and you know, obviously it is literally how I make my living. You know, I have the side project of the I-80 Club, right? Jack Mitchell and I are entering, we're about to hit our 3-year anniversary. It started in June or July of 2022. This will be our fourth football season. We have plans to do more than we've ever done before. Like, we're always growing, right? We're always gaining subscribers. Patreon.com/IED Club for bonus episodes and a whole lot more. we got the guys from Volleyball State over there with us now too. Lincoln Arneal and Jeff Shelton. So we're doing bonus volleyball stuff this year. But anyway, advertisement aside, it is a labor of love. Like, I put a lot of time and effort, of course, into following them, into thinking about them, and into trying to circle all the way back to the beginning, to try to give people what I would want if I was not doing this job. You know, like, the best part about my job, I mean, first, I get to talk about sports for a living, right? Like, that's the bee's knees. The best part, though, that I always think about is what I do to get ready for my show, how I prepare, is by reading articles, by, you know, texting with people that know things. It's the stuff that I would do to kill time if I had a normal job, like you guys, right? Like, so, like, that is awesome. And I never take that for granted. I'm guessing that there are people who do. Like, I will say, and I know that in the transcript that you guys read at Husker Max, like, there is a part in there where I talk about the fact that there are people in this market that don't want to do what they have to do. They don't want to. And I'm not naming names because I don't know who they are. I just know that it happens because everyone gets jaded. everyone is like, I mean, there are things we talk about that I don't want to talk about. So I know that there are people who are like, I don't want to keep talking about Husker football. So they very much exist. I am just happy that I want to. You know, it really helps when you have to talk about something all year, and you also want to talk about that something all year. And I'm in that sweet spot for sure.
Part of me wonders too, and not just Jacob, but again, you're saying just the whole scope of journalists covering football. Is it maybe, just to play the devil's advocate, are people like that are arguing that they don't want to talk about college football, and they're making claims of grifting and just making extreme comments? In today's day and age, it's all about engagement and farming. Are some of these people just saying things like that just to get clicks, likes, and views and get people to look at them? Because some of those, that aspect just seems so extreme to me. Part of me wonders if that some of these people even believe that, or if they're just doing that to get people to kind of, hey, this guy's different. He's unique. He's saying something that's different than what everybody else is talking. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, you know, I can't speak to Jacob's, you know, heart on everything, right? So I certainly don't want to put words in his mouth, but I would say this, like, you know, he did delete his Twitter. So if he was trying to get more engagement or views of anything, like, you know, I don't know where he's going to do that now, at least on social media. So I think that there is a genuine frustration out there. You know, it exists of like, football again gets all the oxygen, and that they're not good. It's the 1-2. No one is down in Georgia saying, man, the Bulldogs, oh God, would people shut up about this team? No, they're good. Why wouldn't you talk about them all the time? But I think that Nebraska, you know, on like an XY axis or whatever, they're at some point they kind of cross this Rubicon of like, okay, you got 40 people at a spring media availability and they're 7-6. Like, okay, that's odd. Like at some point does it go from odd to, couldn't you use these resources to go to a better spot? Yeah. I know that people ask that, to which I would say, as someone who does this every day, and so my job is to get as many people to listen to me as possible for as long as possible, I would say no, we have not crossed that barrier yet, because people are still interested in it. And so then the question becomes, are the fans in the wrong then? And I would say, no, the fans like what the fans are going to like. And you can't control that. You know, there's just like there are television shows that I watch that I know are watched by few people. There are also television shows that are watched by a lot of people. And maybe those are the ones that get the conversations, the articles, the podcasts. It's what people are going to engage in. And it's a fun and a challenging and a unique part of the job is that you, like, I get asked that all the time. How do you like know what the audience wants, or how do you prepare? And it's like, I mean, it's part of it's guesswork, right? Certainly it's responding to the data that you have, but it's also trying to do, in this market at least, everyone's doing it. So how can we do it better, or how can we do it unique? How can we do it differently? What kind of conversations can we have about it? Like it's I'm always in the search for that. And I know that other people in the market are too.
Well, let's talk about the upcoming playoff run. What does success look like in 2025 for the Huskers?
Man, hey, you, TJ, you asked that question, and I have actually been, you know, because I'm writing now a little bit for Husker Max. I had two columns go up in March, and
Those are great, by the way. Everybody
thank you.
Check
I appreciate
Josh's stuff on Husker Max. Yeah,
I appreciate that. I've been thinking about that very question. I was at a movie on Tuesday, and the movie was horribly boring, to the point where my mind started wandering, and I never do this at movies, but it started wandering to what I could write about. As I've tried to think about, because I want to do a couple of like columns a month in the off season, right? Before we get to the season. And one of them was that very question. What's a good season look like for Nebraska football? And I've kind of bounced around a few ideas in my head. And so this is good. You guys can help me figure out what I'm going to write about. I think, and this goes back to something we discussed a few minutes ago, I think getting a memorable win, I think, is kind of in my mind is something that has to happen. Now, how does one define memorable? My first thought was, does it mean going 1-1 against Michigan and Penn State? Whew, that's maybe a tall task. Both teams are going to be in the top 25. Penn State is going to be a true legit national championship contender. Michigan has, you know, a bevy full of future NFL players, and they are coming off of the high of the end of last year. They have a five-star quarterback in Bryce Underwood, yada, yada, yada. Okay, is 1-1 too hard? I did settle on this very quickly. They have to beat Iowa. I do not think, I mean, I guess if they went 11-0 and then lost to Iowa, would that be a successful season? Yes, but come on. Like I think that it is well past time. The bill is due for Matt Rhule and this program as a whole. They've beaten Iowa one time since Bo Pelini's final game, which was in 2014. Oh. One time they have beaten Iowa, and that was, of all coaches, it was Mickey Joseph in his final game as Nebraska coach. I think they have to do that. I certainly think there is some combination of, you know, the number of wins. I think it'd be nice if we were all of us talking on November 1st and Nebraska was realistically in the mix to make the playoff. Not that they're going to go, but that November 1 arrives and they have a record that you could say it's there if they're able to go undefeated in November. As likely or unlikely as that would be, that would require a win over Penn State in November. And to me, that probably means 6-2 entering the month of November. I think, and now again, then people would say, but Josh, what if they lose their next four? Yeah, that's not a successful season. Yeah. So those are some of the ideas that I'm kicking around in my head. I certainly think Iowa has to be a dub. And I think getting a memorable win, and maybe Iowa would be that memorable win, but I just, you know, and maybe you get into the vagaries now of like true progress. Like there just has to be that kind of reason to believe that Matt Rhule has this program moving in the correct direction. And I don't think another, you know, spinning wheel 6-6, 7-5 type season. I don't think that would be enough. So I think that you really want to see some actual progress this year.
I like that.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you want to put a number on it, 8-4, as unfair as that might be after a 6-6 season, but like it's time to take the leap to your point.
Year three,
right? Year three, 5-7 to 6-6. Like it's time for so many reasons. We've talked about this year already, but I think 8-4 is kind of your over underline.
Yeah.
Where baseline. I think you get to 8-4, probably the majority of the fan base is pretty happy. Mm-hmm. And we're going to a decent bowl game, maybe because we travel so well, maybe even a January 1st bowl game, that kind of thing. But getting to 8-4, it's kind of like we talked about last year, you know, going into the year, we said 7 or 5, 8-4, we'd be pretty happy. But then you have to suffer through 4 or 5 losses. So it kind of depends on what those losses look like too, right?
Yeah.
I think over 8-4 in this new world, you're potentially flirting with the playoff at 9-3. You're absolutely in the conversation at 10-2. So anything over 8-4, and it's like, here we go, Rhule's the guy, let's rock and roll, we're never losing again. I think to your point, 6-6 or 7-5, it's probably not on the hot seat. But then when you also, Mattio, talk about something else that will knock you off your optimism, look at the 2026 schedule. Like 2025 is when they have to pounce, right? Yep. In 2026, we have Oregon and Ohio State.
It's brutal.
And I think Michigan as well. Like, it's just brutal. Like,
yeah.
And so they've got to seize the moment. It's year two for Dylan.
Let me add that too. I was going to say, like, some real good stuff from Dylan Raiola, where you're saying, okay, he is the guy. He is someone that can say, get on my back. Like, I think you want to believe going into 2026 that he is that type of quarterback, because I don't think people feel that way right now. You know, I think the first month of the season was a incredible ride, and he got hurt. He got banged up, right? He got injured, and the offense had Marcus Satterfield behind the wheel, and that's never going to be good. And, you know, the season just kind of went sideways. I think if you can get into 26 saying, all right, year the second full year under Holgorsen, you know, whatever has to happen with the wide receiver room, like that's going to be different, right? Because, you know, some of the players are going to be moving on. Of course, the portal is going to be there. But if at the very least, if you got a quarterback you believe in, it just erases so many things. We see it in pro football. We see it in college football. We see it in high school football. A good quarterback can change the game. And so if we're talking about Dylan Raiola all year long like we did in September, I think that you're feeling, you know, really, really good. And I think that, like, I know that we joked about it a few minutes ago, but Holgorsen, man, is such this unique part of this entire equation. And I don't know what you guys think, but I have said for months now, if he would have been hired on December 1st instead of November, whatever, I think there would actually be more excitement for him. It's not that he performed bad, but it's just more that now he became old hat very quickly because he was already on the staff, which is very strange. Like, I read something, maybe it was a listener response this week, that's like, yeah, I mean, I'm not as excited because the offensive coordinator's not new. I'm like, what are you talking about? He wasn't on the job until November something. Like, let's get real here. But I think that, again, mentally, I think that kind of did a number on people. Whereas, you know, if he gets hired, you know, on, again, December 1st, I think we're having a way different conversation and everyone's breaking down Dana Holgorsen offensive film. Like, we couldn't really do that because it was in season. And then by the time you get to the offseason, you're already on to the next thing.
He didn't even know every. He was just calling everybody by their numbers. For the last
they had to
three
put their names on the helmets,
which I thought was great, and I wish he'd continue to do it. I think that's such like an old school coach.
Really,
thing to
hey,
do.
Get over here, four,
15, get over here.
We have an ongoing thing on the show that we just envision him sitting at various diners, like on the outskirts of Lincoln, you know, drinking Red Bull and just drawing up plays on the back of napkins at various diners. So that's what I'd like to think of him doing at all time when he's not at practice.
Yeah, it's exciting. Having him shocking, back for a full right? year will be a lot of fun.
Yeah, it is going to be a lot of fun. I'm excited to see Dylan and Emmett Johnson. Like, yeah. And Emmett got after our Emmett, we talked about what players would break out. Then Dana was mm-hmm. talking about Emmett Johnson and how much he likes him. And so it's going to be fun to see a lot of those guys with more time with Dana, because if, you know, as we kind of alluded to, I'm just completely obsessed with college football. So I've watched Dana's teams over the years, and they scored a lot of points.
A lot of points.
So very yeah. excited about it.
Yeah, for sure. I'm someone who, you know, I think we might have talked about Emmett Johnson last summer when I came on with you guys. I've always been like higher on him than most,
yes,
but I don't
same,
like
so have we.
Like he is very good. Like or he's good. He's at the very least very serviceable. And I think that in this offense, like if you could get him going just a little bit more, a running game, this is such an obvious statement, but it really would change just the math of everything. If you have a back that you feel comfortable with, and, you know, he got the ball more and more as the season went along. I think he's good. He's not, you know, a dynamite rusher. I don't think he's like a game changer, but I think he is good enough that you could get by with him. It's honestly, it's the guys behind him. I'm stunned, I guess, that when Rhule talks about the running back room that he feels as bullish as he is, because I am not, and like he obviously knows way more than I do, so maybe I'm the idiot here, but I'm like, wow, really? Like if a running back to me doesn't break out quickly, that is one of those positions where I'm like, all right, see you later. And I use that as a way to enter into a Quentin Ives discussion of like, wow, it's what, year three now? And we're expecting him to break through? Like, I don't know. It's hard for me to believe that, but that's mainly just the running back position at all levels of football, and that's kind of why yeah. I feel that way.
I'm on record saying Emmett will have the best season for a Nebraska running back since Amir in 2014. Go ahead, Jeff.
Ooh.
Yeah, TJ's been steadfast on that. He's really been rocking that. So we talked about success and what's labeled success. I just wish they wouldn't use the word leap, because I don't know. Like 8 wins to me, TJ, just it doesn't fall under leap to me. You know what I mean? Like
it's a hop.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like a step forward. Like yeah. I think 9 wins is really the threshold there for the quote unquote leap. But that's me being positive, and I don't usually do that, Josh. Usually I'm the pessimist and the negative guy in the show.
Handshake me, you yeah. and me.
So I'm going to be negative here. Is there any game on this schedule that would be a letdown or a disappointing loss in your eyes that you could see happening realistically?
Well, I mean, you know, given that they have just done it so many times since 2015, like if they lose the opener, you know, like that, you want to talk about just another way to sour the whole Nebraska football experience. It's partly that you would start 0-1 again, which isn't it wild that like our entire lifetimes until 2015, well, I guess you guys are older than me, but basically they never lost the opener. You know, when I was born in 88, they never lost it until I think it was my 27th birthday in 2015, and they lose the opener to BYU. Since then, they basically lose the opener all the time. 2015, 2018, 2020, 2021, 2022, 2023. Finally get over the hump last year, but that's because they got to play UTEP. If they go down and they lose another opener, brutal in that regard. But that it's on a Thursday, and then you have the whole long weekend of watching football, and then you're in that bad mood where you're like, I don't even want to watch these games because Nebraska lost the opener on Thursday.
Yeah,
that's one where I just look at and I say, again, it's a way to sap the energy out of the entire room, because then it turns into the typical, cool, you'll beat whatever the next, what is it, Akron and Houston Christian. It's like, don't care about those games, and then you wait for Michigan, and suddenly you're just like, I guess they'll be 2-2 going into October. And it's like, that's how all of the excitement and all the good vibes are sapped very quickly. The other one that I would point to is one that I mentioned a little bit earlier. Did you guys know how long it's been since Nebraska's beat Minnesota? It's 2018.
2018? Yeah.
2018.
I predicted it as a loss, I think.
Oh man, that is one where you want to get like people excited to just be able to like breathe easier again. You beat Minnesota, because that the 2019 game was horrible. That was an ass whooping. The 2020 game was one of the more embarrassing losses of the Frost era. 2021 was weird. 2022 was weird. The Rhule won in 2023, and then they didn't play him last year. So
yeah.
That would be, I think, either of those two games, as losses, I think would be a tough hang. And I guess the third obvious one would just be Iowa, but that's because, kind of like the Cincinnati discussion, it falls at the very end of the season. And so it's just as a way to kind of, you know, you want a crescendo. And if they have another one where they kind of run into that brick wall, vibes will be bad.
Yeah. Well, and the gut punch losses to Iowa have that the way we've lost to Iowa has made it so infuriating, but especially the last 2 years where we undeniably outplayed them.
20 first downs to five last year.
Yeah, right. I mean, the 24 was just like we won everything on the stat sheet except for the final score.
Yeah, it was like two plays. It was the muff punt or whatever happened, and then of course the Caleb Johnson score. You know, those two plays changed everything. And then the fumble,
The Isaiah Nair drop really hurt too.
Oh god!
and missing that field goal right at the beginning of the half. Yeah. Anyway.
Calm down, TJ. Just take it.
I'm sorry. Yeah. I was. You know what's funny? I was traveling for work yesterday, so I think I was on the way to the airport, and I started thinking about that game again. And I almost texted our group of high school buddies, the fantasy football league, that we have an ongoing text conversation. And I was like, sometimes I just think about the game and get really angry. Like it was a disgusting game.
Real all time kick in the pills.
Yeah. Real quick, Josh, I know you got to jump soon. What does the quarterback room look like after Dylan? I know Jalen Graham's dad talked to the media this last week. And I love it how, like, you know, he's 23. They all call him granddad. But it sounds like he's got a really cool, like, mentor-type relationship with Dylan, which is really cool. But you wonder, like, is he the number two guy? Is it this transfer that they got from Purdue who still has, I think, 4 years of eligibility left?
Correct.
Or is it TJ Lateef, who's, you know, a true freshman and by all accounts is, I think, a very good prospect, but you know, I don't know if you want your true freshman being your backup quarterback. So what does that room look like after Dylan?
Man, I don't mean to eject on this answer. It's just so hard. It's so hard to know, mainly because of the portal, right? Like right now, like in the old days, you'd say, okay, so you got Lateef, you know, he's going to redshirt this year and then he'll sit behind Dylan and maybe get some snaps in 26 and then he could take over as a redshirt sophomore or whatever. Or the transfer Davila out of Purdue, he comes in and, you know, he can't redshirt, but he sits behind him and he gets some snaps and then he could be the guy as a redshirt junior. It's just like there's a world, I think, where, you know, honestly, if I was a betting man, I would say the quarterback for 2027 is not on the roster right now. I think it's probably the safest bet. You know, the Lateef recruiting, I don't know if you guys remember it, but it had some, like, there's this weird interview he did. I think it was with 24/7 Sports where it was, I think, last summer, and they were like, the guy asked him, so, you know, you're locked into Nebraska. And he was like, I wouldn't say that or something. And I'm very much paraphrasing it. So I don't mean to misquote him. And the guy was like, oh, interesting. And then very quickly, Lateef walked back. He's like, I'm staying with Nebraska. And sure enough, he signed with him. So like he ultimately did, you know, end up in the program. But, you know, all it takes is 1 year and one offer. And, you know, let's see what happens with the settlement the day this releases on Monday. Right. Like, a lot of stuff's going down in college sports today. The national championship in men's basketball, but it, more importantly for the future of everything, this court case in California and what it could mean for the future of college football. So all it takes is one school saying, hey, Lateef, we're going to give you more Nebraska than Nebraska is, and our collective is going to give you more. And, you know, suddenly he's gone. And so I think that I will take door number three or four, whatever door number that is. The quarterback for 27 is not currently a member of Nebraska.
Got it. And we won't pretend to be experts, but for the common fans out there who don't know, this court case will basically sort of determine next steps as it pertains to revenue sharing in particular, right, Josh? So that means like basically universities paying players directly and they can choose the sports for that. So but you have to assume 99% of the dollars will go toward football and men's basketball. Maybe 98%.
I've heard. So it is essentially a pay for play. The athletes, though, at the very least, are right now will not be referred to as employees, but that's just, you know, the university's not wanting them to be employees. $20.5 million is what the projected number is for this season. And then, you know, it can fluctuate because it's based off of how much money the schools are bringing in on average over the course of the power leagues, if I remember right. What I've been told of the $20.5 million, $16 million will go to the football team, which is higher than Georgia. There was a report within the last few months from down there and I think one of the Atlanta papers had it. And theirs was like 13.5 million. And so that's smaller than Nebraska. So well, now again, maybe my sourcing on that is wrong, but I've heard 16 million. Others have heard 15 million. What makes Nebraska so unique, of course, is volleyball. You know, a lot of schools, I think it's just going to be football and it's going to be basketball, and that might be it. Some will do, like Georgia, apparently they're going to try to do something for everybody. You know, when you're getting down to track and field, I'm guessing it's just, you know, a couple bucks here and there. But for Nebraska, best volleyball program in the country on average, you know, a huge arena. They make money. This is not a losing enterprise for them on the court and off the court. And so what that means, and then what that means for men's basketball, for women's basketball, and even for baseball is endlessly interesting. The sports are about to move into an era of roster sizes changing. Football is going to cut down to 105. Baseball, they could do scholarships up to 34, 35, which right now they have 11.7. So, yeah, the future of college sports very much in flux at this moment in time. And that's not even to mention the portal and everything else that happens inside of college football and basketball.
And even with the revenue sharing, then these guys can still, the players can still make money from NIL as well. They will continue to be able to do that as well. So it's a brave, brave new world that we're living in. Friend of the program, Josh Peterson, thank you so much for joining us, man. Always good to have you.
Thanks so much for having me, guys. I really appreciated the discussion today.
Yeah, thanks,
Josh. Thank you, Josh.
Absolutely. Same here. We need to have you back more often. I can't believe it's been since last summer.
Let me know when. I'm happy to chat.
Sounds good. In the meantime, Common Fans, we will be back at you soon. Get to the Common Fan website, www.commonfan.co. Subscribe on YouTube, subscribe for the newsletter, to the newsletter, all the things. Get out there, get your fill of spring ball coverage. Talk all you want about the third team offensive guards in March and April. Right, I guess we're in April now. In April. All right. We'll be back at you soon, Common Fans. In the meantime, as always, GBR for life.